The issue of semantics is very much on the mind of Jody Rudorin, Jerusalem bureau chief for the New York Times, who explored it in a recent piece titled, In Gaza, Epithets Are Fired and Euphemisms Give Shelter. Jody, welcome to On the Media.
Thanks so much for having me.
Israeli author David Grossman wrote about the propaganda war over the Palestinians way back in 1987. In his book, The Yellow Wind, he wrote, a society in crisis forges for itself a new vocabulary, using words that no longer describe reality, but attempt instead to conceal it. Could you assess that observation from a perspective 26 years later?
Well, some things just continue. I mean, on both sides, there's dehumanizing language and there's euphemisms that I think make the constant conflict and the violence kind of go down easier, as Grossman described.
Those who are slain who are non-combatants are sometimes called the uninvolved?
Yeah, Edgar Keret, another Israeli novelist, told me about this. There is a Hebrew word for civilian, and if a civilian is killed in Israel, it's always used. It's Ezrachim. But then he talked about this phrase called uninvolved, which is not always used for Palestinians, but often. He said, you know, all we can say about this person is that they're not shooting at us. He said, this person is not a child who wanted to grow up and play the piano and not a woman who wished for bigger breasts. It was just someone who wasn't shooting at us, someone who was uninvolved. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really powerful the way he put it.
You mentioned in your piece Ayelet Shaked, a member of parliament who cited a 2002 article and posted it on Facebook.
Right. It's a good example of how much is new and how much is old, right? Because she got all this criticism for making this post on Facebook. And in fact, it was an article that was from a dozen years ago. It talked about how the whole Palestinian people were the enemy. And it defined Palestinian children who think of themselves as martyrs. It called them snakes. And it also said that all their mothers should be killed. And it went viral. And so what's interesting to me about that is the way that the social media networks have kind of put this propaganda war on steroids, because things just happen so much faster. People like Ayelet Shaked and other kind of leaders and officials, they're not phrasing their own talking points in the same formal and maybe careful way that they used to, because they're playing on these different platforms where everything is conversational and quicker. So that's one aspect. The other is that the social networks have just opened up the field, right? So now anybody can be in this propaganda war. It's being fought by people who are in New York or in London, firing off missives and characterizing data. Little themes or memes develop without necessarily anybody in charge or anybody trying to dictate what the talking points should be anymore.
What kind of memes?
There are hashtags on Twitter, one called Gaza Under Attack and the other one called Israel Under Fire. People are doing creative mashups in video or in Photoshop that mix Hollywood thrillers with footage of Israeli or Palestinian leaders or Israeli or Palestinian strikes on each other or things like that. There are these videos that the Hamas is putting out and videos that IDF is putting out, and they both are kind of styled after trailers of Hollywood thrillers. And I don't know, if you didn't pay too close attention and you just saw the explosions and heard the thundering soundtrack, I'm not so sure you could tell the difference.
The last ground invasion of Gaza happened 5 years ago, which was a big 5 years for social media. You write that in 2009, a soldier in the military public affairs unit, Aliza Landis, paid for a WordPress account on her own credit card.
There was tons of stuff going on social media. She was realizing that the IDF was totally absent from that conversation. And so she just said, this can't be. And she kind of went to her superiors and said, can I please post this thing on YouTube? Whereas now they have 40 people working just at Interactive. So now they're really right in the game.
Hamas is also trying to harness social media, but it's encountering some roadblocks.
Right, because Hamas is characterized as a terrorist organization by the United States and by other Western countries, Twitter and Facebook have blocked some of its official accounts. So they've still got some that are going, and I think they have other proxy accounts. There are individual leaders have their own Facebook pages and things like that. But they have definitely been hampered. But they're doing their own thing, too. I mean, they had a video that they posted from their interior ministry that advised supporters on how to post to Facebook and other social networks and told them what to say.
This is the do's and don'ts video.
Yeah, exactly. But a lot of the do's and don'ts that they had were sort of similar to the do's and don'ts that I get from the New York Times. Don't use all the 140 characters because if people want to retweet you, they need space, things like that. Don't write about things that are not right where you are because you'll lose your credibility. And then some of the other ones were a little more specific, like don't put up footage of masked gunmen at close range because they'll shut you down, or don't show rockets being launched from a civilian neighborhood because Israel might attack it, and always add innocent civilian after the name of every dead person, and definitely post pictures of dead people.
As for how the U.S. media are contextualizing the conflict in Gaza, Nimer Sultani, who lectures on law at the University of London, took note of the repeated use of the phrase "once again" in many, many American and Western stories about the conflict in Gaza. He said, repetition is equated with futile death. I guess what he's saying is by saying once again, you've judged and dismissed the conflict over again. Have you noticed frequent use of the phrase? Have you used it yourself?
I don't know that I've used the phrase once again, but I've definitely written repeatedly that this is the third Israel-Gaza battle in the last 6 years, and tried to explore questions of will this time be different or not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is true that a lot of what's happening in Gaza has happened twice before in the last 6 years, and reporters should say that. It's important to the story to have people know that. It's context. Now, is once again a loaded phrase that has sort of this implication of futility? It might.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably say it in a more neutral way, I guess. It relates to some complaints I hear from readers, which is what started everything. No matter how much background you put in a newspaper article, there's always someone who thinks you didn't go back far enough, right? And that because this is always seen as a tit-for-tat thing and it goes back forever, people want to begin the conflict, the specific thing you're writing about, wherever they want to begin it. And I've sometimes joke that every article should include a paragraph that says Abraham had two sons, there was Isaac and there was Ishmael, because it seems like that's how far this goes back.
Jody, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Jody Rudoran is the New York Times Jerusalem Bureau Chief. Her recent article is titled, In Gaza, Epithets Are Fired and Euphemisms Give Shelter.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.